me some meows.
Meow, 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 meow.
Woof, woof, woof.
This is the Freedom Fiends. This is Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster. And on the other end of the inner tubes, we have Mr. Lusander Fiend, the Titanium Meerkat. And Nick, what is your yak name?
The Hazy Yak.
The Hazy Yak. Nick, the Hazy Yak. And Nick is an actual yak farmer, and he likes to yak on the radio. But it is Lou's birthday. Tell me about your birthday, Lou.
Oh, it's pretty good. I'm 29 in worm years and just got back from the Stays Recovery House. Had a nice wild weekend of eating bacon and just all the good stuff that goes along with taking in our trip around the sun.
Well, cool. We're going to talk more about LibPair in action, or Libertarian Paradise in action. You know, a lot of it seems to take place on the internet, and its concepts, and its, we must decide, is this an initiation of force? Is this a violation of the non-aggression principle? And it's like, I kind of feel like, yeah, that's important for newly minted libertarians, but it's very, oh, there's that moth. Hang on. Got it. Come here, kitties. Get the moth. The moth got away. People think I'm crazy. They can't see there's an actual moth here in the studio, and it's been in here for 2 days. Yeah, so, you know, talking about the theory of it is important, but it kind of gets to the point of feeling like, you know, Christian scholars in the 1700s arguing about how many angels could dance on the head of a pin. And the internets are important, but I feel like liberty doesn't really take place on the internet. So I guess you can, you know, that's, it's kind of like that's the classroom and what I'm more concerned with and what Lou's been doing and what Nick's been doing with his agorist yak farming is actually living it. And before we do that, speaking of living LibPair, Nick is going to do a live read for the Free State Project. Go ahead, Nick.
Free State Project is almost 80% of the way to reaching its goal of 20,000 people stating their intent to move to New Hampshire to exert the fullest practical effort toward the creation of a society in which the maximum role of government is the protection of individuals' rights to life, liberty, and property. If you are tired of the constant growth of government intrusion in your area, sign up now at freestateproject.org.
Excellent. And Nick, what did you do this week that's a first for you?
I got my driver's license. I can now legally drive on the government's road.
Excellent. And you're 16 now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. People think I'm leading a cult because we have a 16-year-old on here, but it's actually with his parents' permission, and he's getting school credit for him, and I'm supposed to talk to his teachers about this and fill out a paperwork for his school. it's the Freedom Fiends distance learning lend lease program for building the next generation of libertarian yakkers, and he is getting government school credit for it. That's kind of bizarre to me. I like the whole concept of helping Nick out, except that I have to like to talk to teachers and write something down. That's got nothing to do with this kind of apprenticeship. So Lou, tell me about your concept, speaking of LibPair, about how the drum circle of liberty never ends.
Well, a couple weeks ago, I did a live broadcast from the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, the second annual one. And we have a motto, and that is Liberty Fest never really ends. It just adjourns and moves somewhere else. Because we basically spend most of our summer going camping and doing all these different things and going to all these events. And I got to tell you, I stay pretty darn busy with it. But I know you're a big fan of The Wire, and so am I. And they always start off each episode right after the opening credits with a quote from one of the characters. And
yeah, that's,
I always
called,
think,
that's called an epigram. It's done in literature a lot. You know, I just killed this moth. There's microchips in it. It's watching me. I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Cool. Well, anyway, I think back to one, and it was a quote from Lester Freeman, and he tells McNulty, life is what happens while you're waiting for a moment that never comes.
Yeah.
So when it comes to LibPair, yeah, you can theorize about LibPair, and you can talk about how many libertarians are going to dance on the head of a pin. But unless
dance
you
on the head of a statist, yeah.
Yeah. Unless you actually get out there and live in LibPair, what's the point?
Exactly.
So, we've had the birthday bash. A bunch of us got together last weekend, went out to the lake and did some swimming and all that other good stuff and barbecued. Next weekend, we have a field trip. And the following weekend after that, we're going to invade a small island and camp out on that for the weekend and probably do some other neat stuff in the area. But the whole point is you got to get out there and live the life. What's the point of fighting for liberty if you're not going to enjoy it?
Exactly. And I do like to get out of my windowless bunker, despite what I joke and say I don't. I like to take trips alone with guns out into the wilderness. And, you know, I love to go shooting and hiking with my wife, but I generally like to go out in the woods, out where I like to shoot, during the week when everyone's at work. And even when she has a day off, you know, if we go out there on a day off, there's a lot of people out there. So my meditation is a rifle, a box of shells, you know, a sandwich and some iced coffee in a thermos in the summer, going out in the woods and practicing those 300 and 400 yard shots. And yeah, I've been busy, but I haven't been able to do it the past couple of weeks because I've been busy, you know, swatting wasps of non-truth and wasps of, you know, going for that punk rock Pulitzer Prize, fighting the good fight. And actually, I did something yesterday, got something on record that I don't think anyone noticed, but I think it was kind of important. And I dig Jeff Berwick. I'm not saying anything bad about him, but he said on our show that he's willing to do what he has to to make right to people who lost money in the thing he was telling people to invest in, which he's hinted at before, but he's never come out and said it. So that one line yesterday on the show is probably more important than everything I did last week in the grand scheme of liberty, because it wasn't just opinions or people saying dumb stuff and people following them. It was like, it was a smart guy saying, you know, who's an investor saying, I'm going to invest in this thing. You all should too. And then it turned out the other business partner, you know, may have gotten funny with the money and is refusing to address it. So that one sentence on there of him saying that was, I'm just kind of underlining that with a Sharpie for people to go back and look at. It was a great interview overall yesterday. We don't usually do interviews on this show. People write me all the time and say, you should interview so-and-so. He's got a great book. And I'm like, or he's doing a stage performance about liberty. And I'm like, we're not really that show, man. And the thing, too, about doing anything like that is it actually requires prep and research. And I did a lot of that last week. I did a lot yesterday. And it requires, like, prep and research and getting the person to get a good microphone and working on the sound quality, because we actually care about that, unlike most shows. It'll interview someone for an hour over a telephone. It's just so much more work than saying to my buddies, like, hey, man, let's do a show. You know, there was an old thing in show business back in the 30s. We've got a barn. Let's put on a show. Like, basically, that's how the Hollywood film industry started, was, you know, really small. And somebody said, we have a barn. Let's put on a show and, you know, run these new things called cameras while we're doing the play. Nick, what else is on your mind? You want to talk about important stuff and theories and how many aggression principles and non-aggression principles can dance on the head of a pin. And I'm willing to do that for as long as you want, but I want to make fun of it before, because I'm like, ah, that's what everyone does. And it's really dry and boring. And it just turns into like people who agree 99.8% on everything, you know, screaming at each other over the other 0.2%. But I'll bite. What is your theory? What is your thesis? Present your thesis statement, sir.
So I would like people to be thinking about principles. Yes, it is kind of boring. Yeah. But it's really important to really know what you believe and to know what or why you do things, and especially focusing on your ethical and moral principles. And all three of us, we abide by the non-aggression principle, and I think that is pretty much the best ethical principle out there, because it states that nobody should initiate violence on anybody else unless violence has been initiated towards them or another person.
Let me state that more clearly. I believe that it's more often expressed and best expressed as, do not initiate aggression on others. It's not people shouldn't, people, you know, it's basically a command. It's basically a golden rule. And people can argue all day long about the minutia of it, of, you know, the against me principle, the, well, if you believe in government, you want me in a cage. There's a few steps in there between that. But I'm also a big fan of the, let's see, make this radio friendly, the don't be a Richard principle, you know, because there are people that absolutely abide by the non-aggression principle as best you can in our society. But they're still creeps to people, and I don't really want anything to do with any people like that. So I don't think it's the only rule, although I do consider myself a thin libertarian, you know, and there's this discussion to explain this thin versus thick libertarian. Thin libertarian is someone whose libertarianism just basically is the non-aggression principle, and kind of the there's a longer way of saying it, which is do not commit aggression, theft, fraud, or coercion. Because, you know, you could argue like, you know, is stealing a paperclip, you know, aggression? Well, it's theft. And that goes in with the common saying of the non-aggression principle, which is, you know, do not commit theft, fraud, aggression, or coercion. And, you know, that is pretty much the extent of my libertarianism. I don't have to put in all sorts of things about, you know, feminism or ecology or animal rights or anything that people add to that and make it what's called thick libertarianism. I am pretty,
or social justice.
Or social justice. Yeah, I'm pretty much a thin libertarian. Would you guys agree that you both are?
Yeah, I'm so thin.
Lou's going to make a fat joke, but go ahead.
I am so thin that I call the paper fat.
Yeah. Nick?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. But it's interesting, too, because you, Nick, are a nihilist. And I've heard the argument that you can't be a libertarian if you're a nihilist. And I disagree with it. And nihilism, would you say an accurate definition of it is that no morality can be proven to be absolute in a scientific way?
Yes.
Is that a good one for a
That's
short one?
Pretty much right on spot.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I don't believe in, like, you know, universally preferable long treatises about trying to explain the non-aggression principle like it's a law of physics or, you know, something by Plato. It's pretty easy. It's the golden rule, man. All right, we'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Have you recently defooed a cult that demands constant devotion to a figurehead? The guy who claims to be anti-IP, but uses IP to silence critics? That charming gentleman who thinks all your problems are from bad parenting? If you're tired of tithing to messiahs who demand a lot of your money, consider donating to the Freedom Fiends. We're more fun and don't require constant praise. In fact, we don't even like audience involvement. We talk, you listen, if you want. And if you send us a dollar, we won't complain. We'll dig it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Worms!
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
This is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, talking to Nick Hazelton and Lusander Fiend. And guys, you know how we start every episode and every segment and every sentence with worms sometimes? You know that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it basically means it's joking about the old dated urban hip-hop slang from the 80s where people say word, which meant word to your mother, which basically meant I concur, dear sir, with what you have said, homie. And I had this friend in a band who made fun of it by saying worms in the early 90s. And I forgot about it for, like, you know, till I met Nima Vidotti about 3 or 4 years ago and started saying it to him. And he really liked it. And so we started saying it. But it has become the warrant canary on the Freedom Fiends. And by that, I mean, it's a thing that if we ever stop saying it, It means we've been contacted by the government, but have been forced by the government decree to not tell you that we've been contacted by the government. But I was contacted by the government yesterday, but I can tell you about it. So everybody gets lots of, spam, snail mail these days, like junk mail. Like basically, that's what the post office exists for. You know, these people, these guys get good pensions to slog through rain, sleet, snow, and 39 below degree weather in Wyoming, and with combined with 50 mile an hour winds to bring junk mail to the house. And it's kind of like, without the government, who would deliver the trash to your mailbox?
And that weather is in August.
Yeah. Oh, that's right now. It's 39 below with 60 mile an hour winds. No, it will be in a couple months. Oh, it's going to snow here on Thursday. That's kind of interesting for anyone that doesn't live in the Mountain West. But sometimes you get mail these days. The only way they can get you to open junk mail is by making it look like a bill or like a Dunning letter from the government. You know, you get these things that say Washington, D.C., and they're printed in that font. Oh, what's that font the government uses? That brutalist font. Do you know the one?
Helvetica.
Helvetica. Thank you. Yes. All cap Helvetica, and it's some address in Washington, D.C., and you're assuming it's the IRS or something, and you open it up, and it's for a local car dealership down the street, and they do that all the time. I actually got something yesterday that was priority mail, you know, with a tracking number on it, and it was from a, you know, U.S. government disbursement. It was something, government office, somewhere in New Hampshire, and I was like, it worried me because we'd recently been to New Hampshire, and I was like, did we accidentally commit 3 felonies a day and they're sending us a bill or something? And no, it turned out it was my passport. I, you know, recently went to renew my passport, and it, you know, it was 10 years, it was up, and I wanted my get out of the country now card in case I had to. And it was kind of interesting because yesterday we interviewed Jeff Berwick, and he was stressing, you know, Americans should have their passport. And like an hour after the show, I got my renewed passport. So we can get out of town. If you don't love America, get out. We can now. And, you know, I mean, I think that armchair libertarians and no government people who live in their mother's basement and say, you should never use any government, you know, basically like say, you know, you're not a real libertarian if you use any government services. Well, let me tell you this. You can't get out of the country without a passport. So, you know, that's one of the times I'm willing to make that exception. I guess if you have a private jet, you could probably get out of America without a passport. I don't know if you could get into the other country, but yeah, man, they require you to have your state cattle ID card to travel these days. So that's how the government touched me in bad places yesterday, but it's not worthy of changing the word worms to word, which will be our code if that ever happens. So, Nick, you got some government paper yesterday. Tell me about your first driver's license and how that feels.
Yeah, I got my driver's license from the state of Oregon, the DMV, and they were very nice about it, actually. The Oregon DMVs seem to be very polite.
Was there much of a wait?
No, actually. Well,
a line?
Oh, no, not really.
Yeah, because in California, like we're anywhere in California, L.A. or San Francisco, when I'd go into the DMV, it would be like a 3 or 4 hour wait with an appointment. There'd be a couple hundred people in there. They'd be all angry. You know, I've seen fist fights break out in DMVs in California, and it feels like a fist fight's going to break out all the time. And then we came to Wyoming, and like, you know, it was like a 10 minutes in and out of the DMV to change our registration to this state. And they had chairs, and people politely respected, like the line was in chairs, like you sat and then everyone moved over one chair. It was almost like the way things would work in Libpair, you know, like the slave cattle branding system in some of these rural places is a lot more mellow than in some of these big cities in these coastal constitutional exclusion zones like LA and New York and San Francisco and Seattle and Chicago and Houston and Austin.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
What sets Survival Punk apart from all those other survivalist sites? A rational, creative approach to self-reliance. Applying a punk DIY ethic to survivalism without any of the fear-mongering or tinfoil hattery that pervades the survivalist movement. Survival Punk covers a huge range of topics, along with a healthy bit of myth-busting. Survival Punk provides a ton of dirt-cheap creative solutions to common prepping problems, with an accent on the paleo lifestyle. Check out survivalpunk.com. That's survivalpunk.com.
Looking for a new home with good neighbors, no income tax, an active shooting culture with excellent Second Amendment protections, a great business climate, and less government? Then Wyoming might just be the place for you. And freedom-minded folks are already there. Founded by author Kenneth Royce, FreeStateWyoming.org encourages free trade, political liberty, and voluntary cooperation. Come bask in the laissez-faire Western culture of the cowboy state. For details, visit FreeStateWyoming.org.
Yeah, it's the Freedom Fiends. So if you're listening at home and you're like, wow, that guy can kind of sing, but he's always really off beat. No, I'm on beat on my end. If you listen to the podcast later, you'll hear that. It's something to do with the magic of how radio works, and I'm not using magic in air quotes. Radio is awesome. It's amazing. It's kind of bizarre that we're on it, but because we're good and most, a lot of radio isn't. And we speak the truth to power, and a lot of people are afraid to on radio because they don't want it, because it's their day job, and we do not make our living at this. We do make a little money at this. It covers administrative stuff, but I have a day job, and we all have day jobs, and we don't. We want to maintain our amateur status so we can compete in the Liberty Olympics. Basically, if you try to make your living at radio, you have to make a lot of compromises. I was even watching an episode of Dr. Fraser Crane about that last night, where he was being asked to shill something he didn't believe in. And we would never do that in the Fiends. We only take ads from things we use and or believe in. And so, yeah. So the one thing I wanted to say that's really cool that happened this week, well, there's a lot of things that happened really cool this week, but we moved our whole web world to an offshore, off-site, windowless data bunker, and Derek Slopey has taken over as being our administrator for that and has taken care of all of it, and he's an awesome dude. He is the programmer of Meowbit, and he's the guy who's working on Fiend Phone, and we know him in person. We hung out with him in his giant ambulance at Porkfest, and sometimes it turned into a wambulance when people were in there doing podcasts and complaining about the government. But yeah, there's no wambulance none of the time here on the Freedom Fiends. And the new site, here's what we did. And this is kind of a minor thing that just to let you know how it works. Like when you move servers on something, you have to change the DNS entries, and it takes between, one and two, or half a day and 2 days for most people to see it, to see the change, to see the new site. So I put a banner on the old site that said, "The Fiend site is moving. Don't post comments. They won't be moved over," because we'd already moved it. And the new site, I made a blue background so I could immediately tell, and people could immediately tell looking in their browser if they're looking at the new one and the old one. And the new one, I put the blue up just so I could tell, but I really liked it and I kept it. And I asked for feedback from listeners on it, and it loads faster because it's not on one of these HostGator shared servers where, they put about, literally like 2,000 websites on each computer rack mount unit. It's on a dedicated server run by Derek that has like 5 websites on the same computer. So, it doesn't have to compete with all the other stuff. And when we get spikes of traffic, we won't get knocked offline like we did for 24 hours a few weeks ago. That was pretty much a drag. But, it wasn't the end of the world because the Fiend stuff is out there on torrents. It's out there on streaming. We're on radio. It's on LRN. It's on GCN streaming. It's all over the place. It's on the Fiends. We have our own streaming server. So, if the Fiend site is ever down, it's not really, the end of the Fiends. It goes on and people are still hearing it far more than most podcast-only media. So the thing is, though, the site was blue and I asked for feedback on it, and people kept saying like, "Yeah, man, the new one's really fast. It's, the website, the episodes start playing immediately. You don't have to wait for them to buffer. When you click on an internal page link, it goes bam, it's just right there," which is much more enjoyable of a user experience. But the background is blue, and somebody said, "Yeah, man, I see the new site on my end already. It's like a Smurf on crack, fast and blue." I thought that was kind of funny. Okay, so that's my long-winded. Go ahead, Lou.
The glitch in the Matrix has been upgraded. I'm happy to announce that Detroit servers or Detroit DNS is now showing the new site. Oh. So we've caught up to Pakistan
and China.
Afghanistan,
yeah,
and the communist countries.
Yeah, this is funny. There's a website for, you know, it's a tool basically for web administrators that you can enter in a website, and they have servers all over the world, you know, and a map, and it shows you which IP address it's showing from, and web administrators can tell, you know, that's the old one or the new one. And people should update their DNS to the Google DNS 8.8.8.8 if you know what that is, because that one was showing it in like an hour, and that one's solid. That's the one that they were using to like route around censorship in Turkey a while back too. But you know, about 24 hours after the changeover was made, most of the world could see it, but Lou still couldn't see. He was still looking at the old site in Detroit, and it was not a caching issue. He tried different browsers, different computers, different locations. And it was like, so like in China, a communist country, and like in a rural town in Pakistan, they were seeing the new site, but Detroit was still seeing the old site. So Detroit's internet infrastructure is in worse shape than communist countries in the rural Middle East. What does that say about Detroit and socialism and everyone gets a fair shake kind of policy failure to you, Lou?
Well, equality and misery, and it's the failed state project. It's a status paradise. If you want to try socialism, hey, come to Detroit. There's plenty of it. Now, I recently met a guy. Well, I met him a few months ago, but he grew up in Estonia in the Soviet Union, and he moved to America in, I believe, it was 1989. And he says, you know, it's amazing. All my life in the Soviet Union, that I finally come to America and finally find people that believe socialism can work.
You know, we get a lot of hits from Estonia and a few other former Soviet satellites, you know, and Toronto and suburbs of Toronto, places like that, socialist failed states. But yeah, I don't know why.
So basically, USA or USSA, you know, it's going down, and Detroit is the warrant canary in the coal mine.
There you go. And you're not saying it's going down. Like that's not any action on you or your friend's part. That's like you guys are making popcorn, sitting on the porch of the Statist Recovery Center, and watching it.
Yeah, yeah. It actually requires zero effort on our part. As a matter of fact, we try not to get involved because we might do something stupid like prolong the life of it.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, like in the 60s in Detroit, the radical cry was burn, baby, burn. What is it now? Just like bore, baby, bore, or, you know, churn, baby, churn, or just fail, baby, fail. There you go.
Yeah, I don't even know. Detroit's so messed up, it doesn't even have a battle cry anymore.
Any all of the people who could actually put a sentence together had to move out, except you.
Basically. Yeah, there's a big old sign that says this space for common sharing.
All right, so let's get back to we have to have a discussion of libertarian ethics. And see, I've never really dug that, or at least I've kind of made fun of it, because I always felt that, like, you know, people like Ben Stone or the Liberty Professor and the Freedom Fiends, when it was Neve and I, we used to say we're Beavis and Butthead sitting in the back of his class making jokes. But you guys go ahead. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Nick.
Go ahead,
Nick.
All right.
So the non-aggression principle, just reiterating that, I think it is the best principle, and especially teamed up with the don't be a Richard principle. And I think that would give us an ideal world. And we talk about an ideal world. Doesn't necessarily mean that we're ever going to get there, but it's nice to strive for that. And what I've been doing in my own show is I've been talking about how this would be a perfect world if we did not have government, because the non-aggression principle and the government do not mix. They are mutually exclusive. They do not. The government does not follow the non-aggression principle. It follows the full aggression principle, which I think Lou and Michael came up with.
Wait, what did I do? I'm sorry. I was checking my face beefs. What?
The aggression principle.
Well, we didn't come up with the aggression principle. I came up with the term the aggression principle to describe the opposite of the non-aggression principle, because everybody who's a libertarian, going back to Lysander Spooner, who Lysander Fiend takes his name after, Lou. His real name is Lou. We know him as Lou. But, you know, Lysander Spooner, I did a lot of research on this. Like, I've heard so many people say, you know, like every newly minted libertarian, when they're trying to explain the non-aggression, you know, like what laws are and what the state is to people who don't get libertarianism yet, they say they do this thing, and it's this math thing. They kind of like it always, it can be said in different terms, but it always has the same four or five lines in it. They say every law and every tax is backed by the by a gun. And the, you know, the statist they're talking to says, I've never had a gun pointed at me. What do you mean? And he says, well, you know, if you don't pay a tax, or if you, you know, refuse, you know, if they pull you over and try to give you a traffic ticket, and you tell the cop to get lost, you know, the cop on the side of the road will probably tell you to step out of your car. And if you refuse, he'll probably put a gun to your head and he'll probably throw you to the ground. And if you keep resisting, you know, as it would be the natural instinct of any mammal to resist being captured against your will for no reason, he will kill you, or he will, you know, beat you up and cuff you and throw you in a cage. And the same thing with, you know, if you don't pay your property taxes, you'll get some letters, you'll get some more letters. They'll send a guy by with a clipboard. You tell that guy to go away. He'll come back with his clipboard and a couple sheriffs, you know, with guns. And if you tell them to go away, they'll either, you know, kick in your door and take you at gunpoint, or, you know, they'll send a SWAT team a week later with clipboards and a guy with a clipboard backed with the SWAT team, and they will physically remove you from your home. They will take ownership of it, and they will throw you out in the street, throw your family on the street, throw you in jail, fine you, charge you, beat you. And, you know, then your house will be empty for 2 years until they sell it to a bank. So all laws are backed by the barrel of a gun. That's libertarianism 101. That's the math game we use, the true math game we use to explain it. And I wanted, first of all, I was like, who came up with that? And I asked everyone I knew, and everybody said, you know, basically the oldest you know, like the most senior libertarian they could. Like the new kids said Stefan Molyneux, and, you know, older, longer running libertarians said Ron Paul. And, you know, because these people have all parroted that and not bothered to explain, yes, I heard this somewhere. And, you know, people, even longer running libertarians like Ian Freeman said Harry Brown, who was a Libertarian Party guy from, you know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago. And, you know, a longer running libertarians like Claire Wolf would say, you know, I think Mises said that. But I actually did the research on it and got it back to you. The earliest person I can find saying that is Spooner in the late 1800s. His description of it is a paragraph that takes up 1.5 pages in his book, The Constitution of No Authority, No Treason, The Constitution of No Authority. It's a page and a half in there, but it has all those elements in the order. He's like, you know, police are like highwaymen, something. If you search the word highwaymen in the PDF of treason, you'll find the part. I think it's highwaymen, one word. But we needed a name for that. So I just said it's the aggression principle, because it's completely the opposite of the non-aggression principle. And it is. So I didn't invent the aggression principle. You know, the state invented it, but I named it. I'll stick by it. Worms. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends Distance Learning Liberty Series.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
When I found the Free State Project, I knew it was the key to achieving liberty in my lifetime. It's awesome to be surrounded by like-minded, freedom-loving activists who've moved here to New Hampshire. From politics to civil disobedience, we have it all. Where I came from, it felt that no matter what I did, liberty was dying. Perhaps you feel the same way? Call 888-377-2515 now to learn more about the Free State Project. That's 888-377-2515 or visit freestateproject.org.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
The Freedom Fiends, thank you for your wormness. And yes, we're not thinking clearly because the government rays are coming through the electronic moths that sneak through our keyholes. And I use colloidal uranium enemas to keep away the New World Order. No, I don't. I'm not going there. that was just all gibberish. And we're here to discuss serious, serious libertarian things here at the Distance Learning Liberty Series with yak farming as a minor. That's the major, and yak farming's the minor. And here to tell us about peaceful yak parenting is our latest adjunct professor, the young Nick H. How are you, Nick H.?
I'm doing good.
Welcome to the Wormsis Institute. And what's on your mind? What do you want to tell the class about today?
Well, I want to tell people how we can be without government, how great it would be if we didn't have a government.
But without the government, who would deliver the junk mail? Who would deliver the trash?
The UPS would.
There you go. And people would only deliver really important trash because it would cost more. Actually, I think the price of UPS would go down significantly if there were no government. And I believe when L. Neil Smith does the maths on it, and yes, does the maths is the proper term, that we would all have eight times as much wealth without the government. Look it up, people. Google it. Okay, so Nick.
Yeah, and so Lou brought up an interesting question. Is yes, it would be great if we could get into a place where, or yes, it would be great to live in a place where there was no government, but how do we get there? And I had some trouble thinking about it in the break, but I think the best thing to think about is the Free State Project and how well that's working. Like we said in the beginning of the show, they're almost 80% of the way to get there, to their goal of 20,000 people to move. And I think they can make a difference there. And listening to LRN.fm and all the podcasts coming from New Hampshire, and it's looking pretty hopeful there. It's a lot better than Oregon certainly is.
You know, Oregon could have been the libertarian paradise. It has everything New Hampshire has, including a lot more coastline. You know, that is a consideration. Like, that's one of the things New Hampshire touts. And I love New Hampshire, and I think they're winning the battle in this. But, you know, if you were just looking at logistics and doing the due diligence and actuary work that they did back in the day to choose the states, and Wyoming was a vast close number two out of the 10 they picked. Oregon was one of them, and it was on the list. But, you know, one of the things touted about New Hampshire is, you know, it could secede and play in the international community because it has, you know, I don't know, 11 miles of shipping of coastline or something, 19 miles of coastline. And that's true. I mean, you could bring a lot of ships in that amount. You know, you could have the stevedores of New Hampshire offloading those ships with the giant ship offloading robots like you see in The Wire. That is cool stuff, man. International shipping just blows my mind how would things work in the free market? You know, I think who would build the roads? I think the stevedores, man. Those guys seem like the most amazing movers of goods of the free market ever. But yeah, I mean, Oregon has a lot more shoreline. I think Malibu, California has more shoreline than the state of New Hampshire, actually. It does. It's 33 miles versus 19 or 18 or something. Go ahead.
Let me play devil's advocate here. With this 11 or 19 miles of coastline in New Hampshire, how do the stevedores get around a naval blockade?
Yeah, that totally crossed my mind too. But, you know, we're speaking in non-absolutes of if the government does the right thing and gets out of the way. But, you know, at some point, a lot of things can actually just be sent over the interwebs, which are and 3D printed, you know.
Well, and the whole argument about if the government does the right thing, you may as well just say that stealing underpants turns into giant profits.
Yeah, the underpants dome theory. I know that. It's the I've heard a lot of people say that. Like, the, you know, okay, here's how we get to liberty. A, talk about liberty. B, blank. C, we get to liberty. And the blank is what we're talking about here. And we're going to talk about blank a lot in the second hour, in the blanking second hour of the Freedom Fiends. Yeah, man. Can't keep a good worm down. I get wormed down. I get wormed down and I get up again. I will never stop. I'll be in Gitmo standing on a rations box in the corner doing this podcast with no mic. All right. Worms. Hour two coming up, folks. Give me a worms, guys.
Worms.
Flames. Flames.
Don't tell me what to say.
Worms.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
Freedom Fiends. Can I get a meow?
Woof woof.
Meow. Nick, what sound does a yak make?
It's a grunting sound. I can't really make it. It's hard. It's very low.
Should record it at some point. So this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and I'm talking to Lusander Fiend. Hello, Lusander.
Woof woof woof.
Have you been contacted by the government since the break?
Warm up.
That's a no. Nick Hazelton, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah. We ask everybody how they are because, you know, that can change so quickly in this scary and complicated society where there's the governments and there's humans, and between the governments and the humans. Yeah, sometimes. So to our dear listeners, I will say thank you for your wormness. And this is... This whole episode today is kind of the distance learning liberty series. You know, when I was younger, like before they had the internet, there used to be this thing on cable TV where universities would have something called the distance learning physics class or something. And they would have, you know, a teacher up at a blackboard in front of a bunch of students, you know, giving a lecture on physics, and they would broadcast it on cable TV. And they would have like, I don't know if you could get credit for this, but they would actually, like, it had a curriculum. Like, they would have a reading list at the beginning of the semester, and they would go through the whole semester. And, you know, sitting at home for free, you could learn everything you could learn by attending this physics class. You couldn't ask, could not ask questions, but, you know, it was a pretty cool thing. It was called the Distance Learning Series. And they don't really have that. They might have that, but they don't need it because they have the internet. But I like that kind of square old term, distance learning series. So this is the distance learning liberty series. And I'm kind of making fun of it, too, because I like to live liberty. I don't like to talk about liberty a lot. I like to make fun of tyranny. And I like to talk about what people did that did not involve the government and solutions that people have for getting outside of government control. You know, like yesterday we did a whole thing. We talked with a guy who's like left, you know, like if you don't love your country, get out. And he took his millions of dollars and got out and lives in Mexico, which, you know, sounds like, oh, don't they behead people in the streets there? And he's like, no, man, that's just that's vastly overreported. So there are solutions. There's Bitcoin, the decentralized currency. There's guns if you're old-fashioned. I have guns. I'm kind of old-fashioned. There's, you know, alternative parenting. There's alternative farming. There's just all kinds of things you can do to step out of the way of the Leviathan, the beast, the dinosaur of the state thrashing as it drowns in the tar pits of time in this new paradigm of, I think, human evolution and human, you know, self-organization, of where everything that government claimed to need to exist to do can now be done in decentralized fashions, you know, thanks to things like the internet and Bitcoin and Namecoin and putting, you know, registering deeds on blockchains and things like that. And of course, the government is going to stay in the way. They're going to try to prevent that. They're going to try to keep their monopoly. They're going to clutch to it like... You know, the state kind of reminds me, if you've ever seen that movie Sunset Boulevard, that 1950s movie, you ever seen that, either of you guys?
No, it's not ringing any bells.
Well, I'm sure you know a line from it, the "I'm ready for my close-up." And it's basically it's basically a movie made in the 1950s about a fading movie star who's about, she's about 70. And when she was like 20, she was like the Hollywood actress, and in the silent film era. And, you know, silent films left, you know, the talkies came out. As she said, "I didn't get bigger. The pictures just got smaller." And, you know, she still is like living in this kind of like falling down mansion with her really old, weird manservant. And, you know, she's basically like way past her prime. Hollywood has forgotten about her, but she still thinks that she's a star in her mind. She kind of has dementia, and you know, she hires this screenwriter to come live at her house and kind of be her slave and write her comeback film. And she ends up murdering him in the pool. And when the police come, there's also news cameras there, and she comes down the stairs saying, "I'm ready for my close-up," because she thinks like Hollywood is finally making a film, and it's actually news cameras filming her getting arrested for murder, because that's the only thing she's done that's newsworthy in 40 years. So I kind of look at the state like that, like they're ready for their close-up, but really they're just, you know, an aging relic of vestigial organ. Vestigial? What is it? You know, like the appendix or like the tonsils. Something you don't need anymore, that maybe had a function a long time ago, that's still clinging and, you know, basically has to be removed, but it's not like we're going to remove it with guns. It's more like it will just remove itself. It will just curl up, like, you know, it'll get really infected and make the host sick, make the people sick for a few more, maybe decades. And then it'll just like burst and shrivel up and hang there for a while and then fall off. You know, it'll be like Nima Vadadi said, you know, in 5 years, 10 years, The government's not just the U.S. government, all governments worldwide are kind of going to be like MySpace. MySpace has 500 million users, but none of them have really checked in 4 or 5 years. So, you know, I think what the state will be is, you know, where you'll go to pay your taxes once a year, and then you won't talk to them. And then, you know, they'll kind of forget to even bother with people on that eventually, or they won't be able to pay to do it. So, we talked about, you know, how do you get from point A to point C? Point C being liberty, point A being now and talking about liberty. And then there's this big question mark for step B or step two. Tell us, guys, what is that? What is the step that goes from here to the there of lib pair or libertarian paradise?
I would say that it is decreasing the demand for government, doing things that do not need government to be involved, just kind of ignoring it as much as we can until it gets sick of itself and drowns itself in the bathtub. That's the simple answer, I guess.
Lou?
I'm going to take it a step further. The government was never, ever necessary, and nearly all the things that government claims to be the only ones they're capable of doing was done privately before. Everything from roads, yeah, all the way up to defense. Let me tell you a little something. It was a bunch of militiamen without a centralized government that took on and defeated the world's most powerful empire in the 1700s. And then in 1812, when there was a centralized power and a military, they lost to that same empire. I'm not saying that correlation and causation are the same exact thing, but you do have to ask how that happened.
Yeah.
So essentially what has happened, like any other virus, government has spread, and now it's a worldwide epidemic, but government has spread and has infested all these different things. It doesn't matter if it's education, commerce, whatever. Government has spread, infested it, made it worse. The department making everything ungood has left its mark. So yeah, decreasing the demand for government. It's amazing. Here in Detroit, where government has been the I don't know what you would call it, the third person at your dinner table, whatever.
The uninvited drunken uncle who won't leave.
Yeah, that is a perfect description for it. Government has done nothing but fail and fail miserably here in Detroit. And outside of the people that are absolutely dependent upon government for their survival, meaning the welfare cases, people are walking away from government and this idea of government. And they're realizing what unicorn governance actually is. Because when you talk about government, most people have this idea that they're talking about how they envision it to be this benevolent protector of life, liberty, and property, when in reality, it's the greatest violator of life, liberty, and property. But there was an article, I think it was in Fee, and it was called Unicorn Governance.
Fee! That's the Foundation for, what is that? Economic
education.
Yeah, and that's an organization. That's like the old school liberty thing. It's going back like, I don't know, to the late 30s or early 40s. Yeah.
Yeah, but what it talks about is when you say that government should do this, what you have to do is not talk about, you know, how you envision it to be. You have to talk about how it really is. You have to talk about the voters, whether the whether they're the low information voters, the voters that vote for a party no matter who's running on the ticket, or the people that just say, how can I get the most stuff? You have to deal with the voters. You also have to deal with the available candidates that you have. So when you want somebody to make important national security decisions, your option is, John, let's bomb everybody, McCain. When you're worried about civil liberties, your options are, Lindsey, you don't get a lawyer, Graham. You got Nancy, we got to pass a bill to see what's in it, Pelosi. And you got John, ain't nobody got time to read the bill, Conyers. Those are your options. That's what you have to deal with, not some magical, you know, president that you read about in some novel that's just states Bates' is perfect, benign government that's not an enemy occupation force and looters and pillagers. That's what you have to deal with.
You know, the that was feisty libertarian rant number two of this show.
So vote harder. Get the right people in charge.
Yeah. You know, we have a couple ad spaces coming up available, and I was going to, you know, I was going to like get on the phone and try to call some people and like, hey, buy some ads, which, you know, I do every, you know, 6 months or something when people, you know, stop running them. But I don't think I'm going to do that. I'm so committed to this idea of just like maintaining our amateur status so we can compete in the Olympics, which, you know, doesn't mean I won't take a donation. I like them. And it doesn't mean we won't take an ad for pay if it's something we don't hate or, you know, do believe in. But I kind of think I'm going to fill some of the unused spaces with like, you know, fun fiend stuff that aren't even advertising anything. And DJ and I have been kind of poking something around in our head of writing a, since it's election season coming up, just making kind of an update of that cat muff, you know, Citizens United against too much, not enough government or whatever it was, and making an ad.
Too much unfettered freedom.
Yeah. And making an ad. I don't know if we'll do it, but I'll just put the idea out there. If people want to send ideas for it, I'll look at them. Of something like, you know, election season is upon us. And make sure that you vote for candidates who always will increase the size of federal government while promising the opposite. It doesn't matter if you vote Democrat or Republican, they all want to increase the size of government. So vote hard, vote often, and, you know, vote. What was that thing? Vote the old thing. Vote early.
Vote early, vote often.
Vote early, vote often, which was some gangster politician's saying in Chicago. It's pretty funny because you're only supposed to be able to vote once, but he said vote early and vote often.
And, now, when you say gangster politician, why do you repeat yourself?
I'm sorry. Well, Chicago politicians are some are more gangster than others, I guess I would say. And I do want to do a shout out for a show that's pretty good called Boss. There's two seasons on streaming on Netflix, and it's Kelsey Grammer as the mayor of Chicago. And he's like insane and extremely criminal and dying from a brain tumor at the same time. That's not a spoiler alert. That's in the first 10 seconds of it.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends. Let me get some animal noises there, fellas.
Woof, woof, woof.
Nick?
Hi.
You can't do a yak sound, can you? It's
hard, and I don't really want to try.
You do have yaks,
though. I don't want to embarrass myself.
How are your yaks?
great. I actually have had a new calf since I've been on the show.
Did you videotape it for the world, or did you actually just enjoy it like a farmer?
I tried to enjoy it like a farmer, and I tried to get some pictures of it. I do have some pictures up on Facebook, but the mother has been very aggressive because she got out and left the calf on the other side of the fence. She could not find it. I happened to be there. She was freaking out. She saw me and figured, okay, I bet it was Nick. So let's charge him. And she went after me, so I have not been close enough.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and that's families can be very protective of each other and of their offspring, and it's kind of nature and natural for that to happen. And cult leaders, like the government, want to destroy the family and remove the family, because when you have a strong family, you are impermeable practically to outside things. And people who want to control you generally want to, you know, get you away from your family, whether it's abusive or not. Now, I'm all for leaving abusive families. But, you know, the government, they want to destroy the family unit. They actually used the term a while back. They tried this on for size using the term federal family. The government is your federal family. They actually started using that in ads and in schools. And that's kind of mind-blowing to me. It basically says we're winning to me, because it said they don't want to use the term government anymore, because they realize it's become a really filthy, dirty word that people just go ugh when they hear it. Even people who aren't libertarians, even people who vote, even people who believe in the left-right paradigm, you know, who believe it's the best system we have, we have to support it and make it work. You don't have to support things to make them work. If things are good, they work. They absolutely work. And, you know, it doesn't even require advertising if it's something that's popular, or if it certainly doesn't require coercion, theft, or, you know, indoctrination, lies, and tales like just made up BS. Like the story about the cherry tree and George Washington never happened. Absolutely never happened. The story about Abraham Lincoln walking 6 miles uphill both ways through the snow barefoot to return 6 cents that someone left in the store he was working in as a teenager never happened. What did happen is both of those presidents murdered a bunch of Americans, and they barely teach you about the Lincoln one in school, and they absolutely don't teach you about the Washington one in school, where, you know, the Whiskey Rebellion, where he was a liquor maker, and he wanted to put other liquor makers out of business. So he tried to tax them into oblivion, into failure, and they didn't want to pay the tax. And these were Revolutionary War vets, guys who'd fought side by side with him and under him, you know, 11 or 12 years earlier against the British. And he put a bigger tax on them than what they'd fought the British over, and then killed them when they refused to pay it. So that is the founding. That's the founding father. That's the first president, the American hero. And they're all like that, man. They all have stuff like that. But what you hear in school is he had wooden teeth and he could not tell a lie.
That's all he did was tell lies. Going back to the state baiting thing.
Yeah.
There was an article in Reason Magazine, I don't know, maybe about a year or so ago. And in a court case, the prosecutor made a motion to disallow the defense from referring to the prosecution as the government.
I remember that.
Yeah. She didn't want the defense to say the government case, or the government, you know, is requesting that you do this, because government has such a filthy, negative, wart covered connotation about it.
You can't call us what we are, because we won't get a fair trial in prosecuting these citizens. Yeah.
Hey, I got another tangent. A friend of mine, you met him at Pork Fest, Tom.
Yeah, I like Tom.
Yeah, he posted a little something. I'm thinking about starting a libertarian version of Boy Scouts to teach kids, boys and girls, wilderness and urban survival skills. Kind of a real-life version of Davy Barker's Pork Scouts.
Yeah, I was going to say, he should talk to Davy Barker and you license that name for one Satoshi or something. Yeah, it's he should that's something like a match made in heaven. Like, actually have real Pork Scouts and have the Pork Scout merit badges, like the you know, speaking truth to power and the the Creamy Radio Audio podcast badge.
Yep. And get them younger than the government schools do.
Yeah.
So we can inoculate them from indoctrination.
Hey, was it a spoiler alert when I gave the plot of a movie made in 1950? Is that too soon?
Well, I haven't seen it yet, so you spoiled it.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Ross Ulbricht was arrested by the FBI in 2013 and charged with victimless crimes in relation to allegedly operating the Bitcoin-based Silk Road black market. He has been in a prison cell awaiting trial ever since. If he did it, he's a hero for making the black market a safer place. If he did not, he's a man wrongfully accused. Either way, if you love freedom and want to end the war on drugs, Ross and his family need your support. You can learn more and help fund his defense at FreeRoss.org. That's FreeRoss.org.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends Distance Learning Liberty Series, and we are switching from distance learning liberty to distance learning philosophy today. And I think these two are connected. But we're going to talk about nihilism, which I think gets a bad rap. And, you know, it's a school of thought that basically puts forth that morality has no absolute that can be proven scientifically. And some people take that to mean that you should do immoral things, or that it doesn't matter if you do, or that you should. And I don't see it that way. And there are nihilists who do not see it that way. And there are other people who, like I've heard, Cantwell, I think, like dismissed.
Don't say that word.
Dismissed people. I cussed. I'll hit the cuss dump. No. He's dismissed libertarians who don't think like him as being nihilists. Like, oh, those nihilists, you know, people who don't believe. I think he's used it on, like, thick libertarians. I don't know. I don't, that guy just. But, Nick, tell me about nihilism and why it's not what people think. Like, I've heard people say, like, describe depressed, suicidal, violent people as nihilists. I've heard Kurt Cobain's music described as nihilistic. I've heard, like, self-cutters described as nihilistic. I've heard people who sing songs that have lyrics like, and I wish I could die, as nihilistic. You don't feel like that. You don't want to die, and you don't want to break things, and you don't want to hurt yourself, right, Nick?
Yeah, I'm a self-described nihilist, and I certainly do not believe any of those things. And I don't know any nihilists that do believe any of those things. And there are quite a few nihilists, because nihilism is actually just a point of extreme skepticism. Huh. It's skepticism mixed with human constructionism, which would say that we don't have any proof that anything really exists. That's getting really deep into philosophy. Let's just stick with the morality part of it, ethics. A nihilist would say there is no objective morality, or at least it cannot be proven. We don't take the point that nothing exists. We just take the point that we can't prove if it does. And so how we explain why we have these ethical and moral principles that seem to be to exist, right? The non-aggression principle, we would say that is a human construction. It's a social construction. So it's not really objective in that it's coming from nature or from outside of human interaction, maybe like a God passing it down. But it's that society and humans created it rather than God or natural law or something.
I agree. And there's a libertarian I really like named Paul Bonneau. He's a friend of mine. I know him in person. He's a Wyoming guy. He's actually an Oregon guy. He lived there for a long time. He writes for Strike the Root. He's an interesting cat. He's a Vietnam War vet. He was in the Marines. He joined the Marines because he wanted to. I don't even think it was a sense of patriotism. I think it was just like, oh, it's something to do. Or maybe he did not get drafted. And he said that he spent the Vietnam War in Hawaii administering computers and lying on the beach, like big mainframe computers, because while everybody else was trying to avoid the draft, like the Marine, you didn't get drafted into the Marines. Like, the Marines were people who wanted to be, well, I want to go kill and have veins in my teeth back in Vietnam. That's the joke. But it was like, no, it was people who wanted to be, you know, in the Marines, join the Marines. It wasn't something people frequently got drafted to. So all the Marines that he was, you know, embedded with were all like, I want to go to Vietnam right now. So they brought all the Marines they needed. They needed a smart guy to sit and administer the computers. So he sat out the Vietnam War without even trying in Hawaii, like lying on the beach and playing with computers. And he is kind of like almost post non-aggression principle in his writings and in his, I love hanging out with this guy. He's really cool. And he kind of, you know, not that he doesn't abide by the non-aggression principle. He does, but he's written things that make a lot of sense about how, you know, the non-aggression principle and like if you take that to even like more basic, you'd say you have natural rights, you know, and some people say they're God given rights and, nature given rights. If you're an agnostic, you know, you have the right to breathe. You have the right to breed. You have the right to eat, drink, protect yourself. And, you know, animals have claws, teeth, scales, camouflage, things to protect themselves. But he takes it even further to like almost an ethical law of the jungle thing that like really the only rights you have are what you can fight to keep or what you can just stay out of the fight and keep, to take it to kind of a more Zen thing. And I really kind of believe that. And, you know, we read this thing from Boston Tea Party the other day about like about why you should have rifles. And he said, you know, I don't want to paraphrase him because he got on me about that. But there was a line in it that said, you know, you can scream initiation of force. Initiation of force, you're initiating force all the way down your oppressor's gullet. All fish wriggle when caught. And that's a really powerful line too. And these are two of the guys that started Free State Wyoming back in the day. You know, they were involved in the voting process of what state to pick. And there were, you know, a few people, like 300 or so, that picked Wyoming instead of New Hampshire and just said, we're not moving to New Hampshire. When the vote was over, they said, we're staying in Wyoming or we're moving to Wyoming, because they were more rural, more rustic, more just kind of leave me alone. Like, the Free State Wyoming thing is like 300 or 400 people. The Free State New Hampshire thing is, I don't know, 1200, 1400, 1600. But the Free State New Hampshire thing has like 1,000 times more presence on the internet, because it's people who like to be on the internet and it's people who like to film everything they do. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I've been to Free State Wyoming stuff, and it's like, if you pulled out a video camera, people are like, why are you filming me? You know, it's people who don't want to be on the internet. And I kind of like that attitude more. I'm on the internet a lot and I'm on the radio in Wyoming, but I really kind of like Paul Bonneau's attitude. I don't know if it'd be considered nihilist, and I don't want to call him something he's not, but I really like the, you know, there's no objective intellectual proof or universally preferable mission statement of liberty. It's like, you just kind of live the best life you can and try to convince others to stay out of the way and not aggress on people and, you know, choose your battles, but be willing to fight to defend yourself, but not initiate aggression on others. What do you think of that, Nick?
Yeah, I dig that.
Is that nihilism in any way? Does it resemble nihilism? Does it smell like nihilism?
Sure. I think it kind of takes the next step, I think, which I do too. I say, well, everybody should be able to do whatever they want unless they harm other people, right? And nihilism just, it doesn't take it that far, I guess. It's just the point that we don't know. And I guess that's what it is.
Is nihilism the opposite of objectivism?
No, actually, it's not. So I like to kind of draw the comparison to theism and atheism and agnosticism. I would say nihilism is an agnosticism in that sort of scheme, where theism is objectivism and atheism would be.
So you're not talking about religious atheism. Are you saying that nihilism is like political atheism?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, no, actually, it's not. I'm saying in philosophy.
Philosophy speaks in absolutes, and nihilism says there are no absolutes. Is that correct?
It says that we cannot prove there are any absolutes.
Yeah. And, you know, people who are of a faith for something, whether it's for a deity or for the state, are really bad with logic. And I don't discount faith, and but I discount the cyclical proofs that people try to use with faith. You know, they say, we must abide by God's rules. And you say, why? And they say, well, because there's this book, and, you know, that says that God, you know, basically it's like there's a piece of paper that says this piece of paper is true, and therefore you have to abide by it. And I have no problem with people who believe like that if they don't, like, initiate force on me to abide by it. I believe that, you know, the people who worship the religion of the state are actually dangerous, because by doing so and defending the government and defending the hymns to the state and the, we must salute this thing because somebody died, you know, and like the people that you're backing when you do that are people who murdered their own soldiers when they tried to compete with them, you know, in the honest market selling whiskey. So the religion of the state is the scary religion, and it has the same circle-shaped cyclical proofs. You know, why do you worship the government? You know, why do we have to have government? Because without government, who would build the roads? Well, but
or yeah, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Yeah, it says so in the Constitution.
Yeah, that's an amazing one to me, is that the worship of the founding papers that, you know, A, you didn't sign, so you're a slave being born into them. B, don't really, if you read them, they don't really protect you the way you think they do. And C, they're not abided by in any way at all. You know?
Oh, yes, they are abided by, because they fully exercise the power to lay around and collect taxes. There is no limit on laying around and collecting taxes, so there's no protections. The Constitution is not about liberty. It's about drawing up a central plan to create a government, and government is the negation of liberty.
Yeah.
And liberty is the negation of government.
Yep. So back to nihilism. That was my long complaint about circular proofs, and kind of why I think I might be a nihilist, but I don't know that I am, because basically, you know, the sources I've tried to find on it, like, who's that writer, Nick, that's really dry and boring?
Nietzsche.
Yeah, Nietzsche. I tried to read Nietzsche in college, and I wanted to throw the book against the wall. It was the most, like, depressing, dry, long, you know, you're not, what is that thing like, you know, I don't want to join your revolution unless I can dance. It's kind of like, I don't want to join your philosophy unless it's readable. And, you know, I read what's the cockroach book where the guy wakes up and he's a cockroach? Metamorphosis by, yeah, that one too.
Yeah, I don't like that. Yeah. I hated that book.
Is that nihilist?
What was that guy's name? The author, he was kind of, I think that author who wrote Metamorphosis was kind of, people think of him as maybe a nihilist, and same with Nietzsche, but Nietzsche was not, I don't think he really, I don't really know, but he kind of,
yeah, Franz Kafka, who was really just depressing. And, you know, he wrote well of the term Kafkaesque is always used to describe, it's used more than people actually read his stuff. And it's used for anything like the movie Brazil, the really funny movie about, you know, British bureaucracy taken to the nth degree is considered, to be Kafkaesque. But yeah, I don't think things are provable with morality. And we'll talk more on that when we get back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Freedom Fiends. It's time for the redemption in the third act, and we will be back. Well, Fiends will be back. I won't be back. It's my night off. To go out and hunt hamsters in the dark with my night vision rifle. tonight is going to be Bill Buppert and Derek J. Freeman, two people I really enjoy hearing on The Fiends. And here to tell you the redemption in the third act about nihilism and libertarian anarcho-capitalism, which just sound like, what are they talking about to most people listening to talk radio? But stick around, man. We're fun people, and I think we know what we're talking about. So go ahead, Nick. Tell us about nihilism.
So nihilism often has these false connotations of depression and nothing matters, but that's not true. I don't know exactly where those...
I bet I know where that came from. That probably came from in the 60s or 70s, some college-educated journalist writing about, or maybe... the first place I heard it was about punk rock, actually, in the early late 70s. And it was, people who were into progressive rock and Leonard Skinner and stuff that made your heart pump and made you go, yeah, America, and these bands just came out that were just about the depression of the unemployment in England and not being able to find a job and society trying to tell you what to do, and they were really negative in their lyrical content and the way they looked and dressed and acted to normal people. And probably some college educated, person who was forced to read Nietzsche and write a term paper about it, who was writing as a journalist for, the London Times or something, called the Sex Pistols, nihilistic music. And it kind of caught on. And I think a lot of journalists who didn't really know what nihilism was and thought from context that it meant depressing, ultra depressing, just picked it up and parroted it. That's where I think it came from.
Yeah, but it is false. I mean, some people can take it to that level of depression or whatever, but you don't have to be that way being a nihilist, and I'm certainly not. I think there's some beauty in nihilism and that we can't prove anything. And really, it doesn't matter that you can't prove anything, right? You're going to assume that you can. Is a cheeseburger in front of me. I know it's going to taste good because I've tasted them before.
Yeah, and people who criticize anyone saying you can't know anything for sure, and even like educated anarcho-capitalists will say that, like, well, you're a nihilist if you believe that, the non-aggression principle isn't absolute, but it's like, prove it's absolute, man. I mean, you can have all sorts of indicators. It's more provable than that the state is good, but it's not absolutely provable in a scientific sense without a doubt. I mean, the term proof is really thrown around a lot, and it doesn't mean what most people think. When most people say, I have proof, they're saying, I have evidence. That evidence is not proof. Proof is something that's absolutely replicatable over and over and over, in controlled settings or any settings, and you can get the same results from any experiment. And morality doesn't really have that. It's not chemistry. It's not electronics. It's not computer science. I've said that computers are an interesting mix of science and voodoo, and I almost think the same thing is true of ethics. Like, you can argue the science of it, but it's almost voodoo in trying to say, yeah, this is absolute or that's absolute. So, Lou, what do you got some redemption in the third act here?
Well, when I get done here, I'm going back to LibPair and finishing out my birthday weekend. MPLC has a meetup this afternoon. I'm going to go out there and spend some more time.
So you left LibPair to come and talk about LibPair, and then you're going back to LibPair. It was kind of like the opposite of those Belgian soldiers in World War II that were like fighting the Nazis in the daytime, and then they'd come home for dinner and then sleep in their own bed, and then take a truck 5 miles up to the front and keep fighting the Nazis.
Well, I would have done the show from the Status Recovery House with a live audience, but the storms came through, took out electricity and the houses across the street, and took out internet at the Status Recovery House. So I kind of had to come back here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a very good weekend. One of my friends gave me a book by Jean-Jacques Rousseau called The Social Contract. I will note that he did not sign the copy that he gave to me. So I'm going to be looking at that and reading it and laughing at it. But parting words, as far as the don't be a Richard thing, if you want people to come over to your belief system, if you want people to believe that your belief system is better, live by example and don't be a Richard.
Worms. I wholeheartedly concur. I wish to subscribe to your newsletter and purchase your services and products. Worms.
Send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Pueblo, Colorado.
Send yourself in a self-addressed envelope. Yeah, to the government printing office in Box 1, Pueblo, Colorado. No. That's been replaced by the internet. The internet has replaced that. All right. Thanks, Nick. Thanks, Lou.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Worms.